You ready for Basecamp Fitness's best deal yet? 7 days for $7. That's right, 7 days for $7. It's time to double down on your fitness goals and snag this offer before it's gone. Call or text Basecamp Fitness at 913-232-9770 or go to basecampfitness.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the show. A couple of interesting notes that we can discuss with our next guest, Bill Moss. Jake, I know that you like... You're is a former employee at CBS Sports, and the football coverage, you enjoy the news tidbits.
I do.
Phil Simms just tweeted out, great 26-year run with CBS Sports, even though that part of my career is over. I look forward to what is next. So, Phil Simms, you have a smirk on your face for some reason, isn't it? What are you shaking your head for?
It makes me think about him farting on the air.
Look, that's... In no way was that what I was trying to get you to talk about, but...
I never had a chance to work with Phil Simms, so... Right. I feel like...
And guess what? Now you won't...
I feel like the writing has kind of been on the wall for that one.
Okay.
Since they moved him out of the booth with Tony Romo. And they moved him into the studio.
Nate, any comments there? Boy, this guy's harsh. Let's leave it alone then.
Congratulations!
Alone.
Congratulations on a good run, Phil Simms.
Thank you.
Sometimes that CBS halftime show seems like it's got a whole lot of people there and not enough time for any of them to say anything.
I do think 15 people there at the desk.
You know what I mean? It's like they got 3 minutes to do a segment at halftime, and there's 9 of them on set, so each one talks for like 15. It's like, how do you really feel strongly about what any of them have to say?
It's like I only want to hear what Bill Cowher has to say, anyways.
He's great. I like Nate Burleson.
Yeah, he's all right. Boomer's all right, too. But, I mean, you know.
I like – it's not the same. I like Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah.
I was like, you're Jimmy Johnson.
I feel like the former coaches have the most inside information and what's going on.
You know who else I like to hear?
Bill Belichick?
Bill Moss.
Oh, yeah, that Bill. Yeah,
Bill,
that
good
Bill.
Morning. How are you?
Hey, guys. What's up? Yeah, how about Phil, man? I mean, hats off to it. You made a lot out of nothing.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of yeah.
I feel like that's how whenever they run me out of here, that's how they're going to sum everything up. Stephen St. John, they made a whole lot out of nothing.
There's something to be said for that.
Yeah, may we all be so successful. Yeah.
Right. You had a nice video tribute to your former teammate Daron Cherry at the tribute yesterday, Bill.
Yeah, I was there. You were up on behind stage for most of the night. I didn't really get a chance to visit with you, but it was great seeing a bunch of the guys. It always is a good time getting together. With Daron, I mean, there's just, I mean, I think someone even said it. He's not even fun. So I don't, it's hard. How do you roast a guy that's not fun? You just say all the great things that are about him. And that's what it ended up being. So, I mean, even if you were, I was thinking about it, like, I had to roast him. Like, what would you come up with? There's just nothing out there. Neil made it an attempt, I think, but it faltered hard.
Yes, that was the most interesting moment of
crash and burn
of the night. You know what I thought was really cool, though? Because originally he wasn't scheduled to speak, but then Dan Salimua got up there, and he gave a passionate plea and backed it up with some numbers as to why Daron Cherry should be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And he was emotional. That was a pretty cool moment of the night, Bill.
Yeah, and you know, Dan didn't really play with him that long either. You know, Daron was done in 91 and with his knee injury. So, you know, Dan, but you know, the impact he had, I mean, even Irv Eatman was there and he did a video tribute as well, but it was only a short period of time. But Daron just had that impression on you. And the one thing that came back to him was always, you know, how much film study he put in with his guys. I mean, he really did. I mean, he would jump routes, like, from center field that no one else knew was coming. But, he would jump routes, and he always was high up there in interceptions almost every year. And when Marty Schottenheimer got here, I remember because Marty was so stern and strict about how you couldn't freelance, right? You couldn't take gambles. He wouldn't have any part of it. And I remember him saying that he thought that the two people that, you know, had the kind of wind taken out of their sails was Daron and myself. because we would make plays. And when you had a play within Marty's system, you couldn't leave what you were supposed to do to go make a play. You had to do what the defense called for. And Deron, even in that, would still find his little cheat sheets, I used to call it. If you're watching the film, you're going to pick up some cheat tips, and you can jump things. And he did that, and he made a career out of it. And he was just a phenomenal player. And he was always just a quiet leader, you know? He never really said much, but when Deron talked, everybody listened.
He told the story about how you were involved in his knee injury. That was interesting. I had not heard him tell that story
before. I hadn't either, to be honest with you.
What, did you remember that the way he told it?
No, I people talk to me all the time about this, you know, and some of my teammates can remember plays and things and can describe it to a T, and I'm just like, wow, man, I really don't remember much.
You know what? Sometimes that's a good thing. You know, I think about, like, I don't know how much I want to remember from the past. But yeah, that was a fun night last night. And so something else I wanted to bring up. Speaking of great former Chiefs, we find out that the newest inductee into the Chiefs Hall of Fame is Tamba Ali.
That's great,
right? What a deserving player! What a great pass rusher. And you talk about a guy that he didn't talk much, very even keeled. We had him on a couple of times on the Jared Allen show when I used to host that radio show. And to get him to talk was tough, but when he was such an engaging guy. But I think it's been really interesting to see him now as he's mentored George Karloftis. He's been working with Felix Anudike Uzama in the offseason. But maybe give us a few words about Tamba Ali going into the Chiefs Hall of Fame.
You know, it always. First of all, I mean, he's such a nice man. He's just such a humble, polite, soft-spoken. I've come to know him after his playing days through the ambassadors, and I like him, and we've become friends. But you know what? It always amazes me is, you know, guys like him who come from places that he came from. You know, in some instances, third world countries, right? I mean, it's and to find a path. I mean, he came to the United States and couldn't speak English. He didn't know any English, right? Think about that. And to learn a new language, to learn football. Never heard of football in his life growing up. It was soccer. That's what he played. And to take the journeys and to be able to overcome all kinds of obstacles, you know, not just, you know, your challenges of playing a sport that you never even watched on television growing up, but to be able to come over the hurdles that he's had in learning language and becoming friends and going to different schools and trying to fit in. Those things are just paramount. You know, it's like to become great at something that never even knew it existed, just tells a lot about the individual and their mindset on wanting to get something done.
By the way, something must be going on at CBS today, because now Boomer Esiason has announced he's leaving the NFL today on CBS. And so movement over at the NFL on CBS, we'll see what else happens.
I think those guys knew all that was coming for a while. I mean, I think Phil Simms was talking about it back in the fall when he was on. He said, you know, he's probably going to be done, but, you know, he'll never leave football. He says he's looking forward to being a part of it somehow, way, shape, or form. I think all those guys, you know, that's a tough business, you know, looking for ratings all the time, trying to keep up and keep fresh names in place and stars and who wants to tune in. I mean, it's a racket.
Yeah, the releases are coming fast and furious. Matt Ryan is joining the NFL today and will team with James Brown, Nate Burleson, Bill Cowher, and J.J. Watt. So there's your group there. And like Haley, you said, every year when great former NFL players retire, they're all looking to get involved in broadcasting. And so there's Matt Ryan. There's another one who'll step in and be a part of the NFL today. All right, let's talk about this draft. We were talking.
What about it?
Well, did you like it?
I did. Yeah, even before all the great accolades and grades have come out, and I watched it. When I was looking at all the wide receivers and tackles that would be available when the Chiefs picked, the first guy I thought was, I bet Andy takes Worthy just because of the speed thing. I really did. And I thought, I was watching it, and when he picked him, I said, yep. And then he went right back to BYU and found some cooking there with Kingsley. The first two picks I thought were great. And one thing Andy Reid learned over the years is he always used to think the system made the wide receivers. And we've had conversations about that. And he always thought, like, it doesn't matter. We'll make another Sterling Sharp or Brooks. The system makes that. But the one thing he learned with Tyreek Hill is when you can blow the top off the defense, that changes everything. And just when you line up, put him in the huddle. Regardless how things materialize over the years and what his specialties become in the passing game, just putting him in the huddle with Hollywood Brown, your defense is just screwed. It really is. And then when you have Pacheco in the backfield and Kelsey and the other tight ends that we got, it's too much. And then Rashid Rice and the other guys, they all fall in. But it's a different game. I mean, and we saw it. We saw it happen. The year after Tyreek left, defenses played us completely different.
Yeah.
Completely. Everyone's like, whoa, what's wrong with the Chiefs? They can't score 40 points a game anymore. They stink. We're not going to the playoffs. We heard it all last year when they had to find a different way to run an offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And kudos to Patrick Mahomes for that. But when you got that speed like that, it's going to change everything. It's going back to what it was before. And you're just not stretching the field horizontally with them. You're also vertically, you're also doing it horizontally.
Yeah.
So to space your guys 11 defenders out, you've got to spread them wide and you've got to spread them deep. And all that does is create a lot of different pockets underneath.
You know, the other thing, I love the fact that you brought up Hollywood Brown's role in it too, because those offenses that we saw in the early years of the Mahomes era here that had speed on both sides, mm-hmm. then you got to play like you started seeing everybody playing two deeps. You know, they had to have a safety on each side, which yep. opens up the middle of the field for Travis Kelce. And now they got another tight end that can open up the middle of the field for as well. I mean, it's when you have to account for speed like that, Bill, you have to pick your poison against the Chiefs, which they didn't have to do as much last year.
Yeah, and that's they didn't for the last 2 years, really. And you could take the risk of bringing a safety down into the box or have a rover type of player. You could take the risk of blitzing more and going one-on-one on the outside. I don't think you don't want to take those chances now. You have to play a lot more gray and keep everything in front of you as a defense, and that's and we've seen what happens when the Chiefs get that look. You know, they get down in there and they can blow the top off you and find a lot of different ways to score underneath.
All right, so Bill, you expressed your excitement about the Chiefs selecting Sioma Taia in the second round. And this was a guy that...
You're proud of yourself for saying that.
You know what? I've said it 50 times before I got it right, Bill, so I'm not that proud of myself. Trust me. The fact that so many people had him linked to the Chiefs in the first round, and clearly, like you said, the BYU tie and the need to go out and invest in a left tackle of the future so they can, hey, look, it works. They've won championships, but they'd love to stop the revolving door and find a guy who could protect Mahomes for several years to come. You look at the athleticism. I love it because he's been a boxer his whole life. He's tough. He's mean. He's physical. But people do say he's somewhat raw and still needs to work on technique, and that's why he was in the second round. How do the Chiefs handle him? Because they've got Wanye Morris. They still got Donovan Smith dangling out there as a free agent. And then you bring this kid in. How do the Chiefs handle what looks like this massive talent at left tackle?
Yeah. So, he's going to work his way into the lineup. But like you said, he's got all the things that you want, right? He's athletic. He's a competitor. He's got the size, the body for the offensive line. He wants to be good. Athleticism, all those things, you know. Now it's just a matter of honing those skills, right, and becoming good at what you do and understand the angles. That's the biggest thing for tackles to get down is understand the angles of a pass rusher, right, and keeping those techniques that you learn and keeping all that in line so that you're working angles so that they can't get around you and they can't get underneath you. It's just reps are going to do that. What he's actually, wasn't he? Because he's only there 3 years in college, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's young,
right?
Yeah.
Wasn't he? Yeah, a young guy, enthusiasm. And here's the other thing I like. They held true to this in their draft, too. They're not just collecting talent. They're not just, filling spots where they need players. I mean, they're doing that with a combination of building a team. Also, right? So what I'm saying is the guys they're getting are the right guys. You know, the guys that want to come in and work and put the time and the energy into doing stuff. Good, solid background kids that, they want to be gym rats. They want to work out every day. They want to try to better themselves. All those things. Just giving of themselves, right? And so none of these guys are me guys. That's the number one thing. They're team guys, and so they're not just the Chiefs just haven't done a good job of getting good guys, talent wise. They got good teammates too.
And look, this tight end Jared Wiley, 6'6", 250 pounds. What are your thoughts on what he can bring to the table?
He's going to fit in there. Look, when you get in that room and you see those guys, they're going to be in there. If Blake Bell's there or Fortune and, Kels, those guys are going to teach, right? You learn a lot from them. You get a lot. That's a lot of knowledge in there, and he's going to feed off of that. And when I came into the league, that's what I did too. You look for the guys that have done it. You look for the standouts, the ones that are the Pro Bowlers that go to the Pro Bowl. You look at them, and you watch – you're quiet as a rookie. You come in, you're all ears, right? You're taking everything in, and you're looking to see how other guys do it because it's an unknown. You come in, and it really is an unknown. You're going into a different locker room. You're going into a different league, and everybody's good. So how do the good ones do it? And you watch how they work, and you watch how they go about their preparation. That's what we were talking about with Daron Sherry last night. He was one of those guys. You take those things in. Art Still, he was one of those guys I looked up to, and I wanted to see how they did it because they're successful in this game. So, yeah, and so he's coming into a great situation. And, for him, if he stays healthy, and I think that's been a little bit of an issue for him, but if he stays healthy, he's got all the tools to be a really good tight end in this league.
Hey, Bill, last question for you. Last year the Chiefs drafted Felix Anudigi-Uzomah in the first round. He played a lot while Charles Omenihu was suspended. Then he didn't play hardly at all. Then he had to come back, and he played in the Super Bowl. And so now it's kind of a similar situation. Charles Omenihu is going to be out for a while with his knee injury, so we think Felix is going to get chances to playing time early. And I mentioned that he has been working with Tamba Hali. Tamba posted some videos of him working and trying to mentor him and help him, which that can only be a good thing. And I know there's some people disappointed that the Chiefs did not spend a pick on a defensive lineman. You know what it takes to be a great pass rusher. What are your hopes for Felix in his second year. Now maybe that he's figured out some things and working with Tom Bahali and has a chance to maybe make a splash in his second year.
Yeah, so like I said, that first year, you know, when you come in, it's tough, you know, because everything's new and you're trying to figure everything out. Every single day you go in there, it's new for you. Something is different. It's a new opponent you're preparing for. How they go about things. You're flying a new itinerary. You're going to this state, to that state, to this city. So everything's new, and it comes at you like in a blur. But what I like about him is that he's doing the things that are necessary. Nobody told him to go to Tom Bahali and work on, you know, hand placement and things and grappling and understanding leverage and how to use a person's body weight against them, how to get on the edge and how to get to a shoulder, all those things. So, I mean, he's taking it upon himself to go do that. It's not like the Chiefs are like, hey, why don't you call this guy up? I mean, he reached out for that. And he knew, he'd also heard, I'm sure, the benefits it had with
Karlaftis,
with George, yeah. So, that in and of itself is a great sign that he's taking the necessary steps to get better.
Bill, great talking with you as always. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, guys. Have a great one. Take care.
It's our man Bill Moss, who was there yesterday with me at the tribute to Ron Cherry put on by the Christian Nicoya Foundation. Great stuff, as always, yesterday at Voodoo Lounge at Harrah's Casino. Great host of the event yesterday. Always treat me very well and always have fun at the Voodoo Lounge at Harrah's Casino. We'll take a break. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Steven, and I'm crawling to the finish. Won't you help me?
We got 30 minutes to go, buddy.
Quit bragging.
We can do it. Especially with our next guest.
I like our next guest. I don't know why you're talking bad about him. Nick Jacobs has forgotten more about the NFL draft than you'll ever know.
I always love that phrase. That's a good phrase.
Yeah. Right?
Thank you. I've forgotten a lot.
I think I used that on Twitter this weekend.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
That sounds
good. It's relevant.
Hey, listen, pal.
Nick Jacobs, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me on. And don't worry, I forget a lot in life in general. So
right.
Don't worry about it.
That's right. Nick Jacobs, how many man hours do you think you put into researching and preparing for this NFL draft?
Probably more than I should.
Right.
I don't want to add up the numbers. I'm going to be like, man, I need something else to do with my life.
Nope.
You know what?
No, you don't. We depend on you for this.
Yeah,
so
we were just having a conversation with my kids about you. Find something that you like to do so much that you don't even really pay attention to the clock. If you lose track of time while you're doing something, that means you really love it. So there you go. You found something that you love.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. It's just, you know, there's certain things probably need to take priority at times. Who knows?
Well, don't worry about that, all right? Hey, let's get into... So one of my favorite things to look at when it's time for the draft is your Chiefs Best Fits board. And you rank the players at the positions, not only on their talent, but how they fit with what the Chiefs want to do offensively and defensively. And so I look at that, and as soon as they make a pick, I go and check things out and see where you had them and what round you had them projected to go. And so let's talk about the players that the Chiefs took. Starting off with their first-round pick of Xavier Worthy, you had him as the number 8 wide receiver with a second-round grade, and you had him behind a couple of guys that were available. Ladd McConkey, Ricky Pearsall, Jalen Polk. And so give me your thoughts on Worthy and that selection by the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I love the selection just because, obviously, of the 4-2-1 speed. I know at times there were some hiccups in going against press coverage, but with what the Chiefs have combination-wise with Kelce, with Marquise Brown, and obviously with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, the combination of Brown and Worthy together speed-wise on opposite sides of the field is going to terrify defenses and terrify safeties to where the Chiefs should be able to pretty much dictate whatever they want to do on offense, just like they could in 2018 and part of 2019. And that, because even then, the Chiefs didn't have that same speed on the opposite side because Sammy Watkins isn't as fast as what Brown is. So, I mean, having that threat on both sides is going to be fantastic in itself. But with a player like Worthy, look, I mean, he can get in and out of his breaks quickly. He can make some double moves and make corners look silly with their anticipation of it. Whenever I was watching this game against Alabama, they had a safety over top of him on most of the plays. So A.D. Mitchell and Jalen Sanders were able to kind of do whatever they wanted to do in one-on-one most of the time because Worthy was getting that respect to where a corner was playing 10 yards off on most plays, and he had a safety over top. So the combination of that showed the level of respect that Nick Saban had for his talent and his speed, and Saban was obviously glowing about him on the draft coverage that he was on ABC, I believe.
I can tell you what, after listening to that breakdown, Jake sure as hell wishes I would get in and out of breaks a little bit more quickly, but I don't. I won't, because I do what I like here. Nate, go ahead.
Well, when you mentioned, you know, the fears of his struggles against press coverage, and obviously he's not the thickest wide receiver right now. Andy Reid uses motion, pre-snap motion, so well for his wide receiver. We'd see him do it with sprint motion with Tyreek Hill. You got to chase the guy all over the field before he even snaps the ball or before they even snap the ball. How much can that help? Like, how much can Andy Reid just scheme him into situations where maybe the defenders aren't able to get up on him and press?
Yeah, you're 100% spot on there, Nate. That's what they can do early on in his career while they continue to work on portions of that. It's just, and that's what Texas did. That's what I wrote down in my notes, is if Texas moved them all over the field, they motioned them everywhere. So, I mean, you're spot on with that part of that, to where Andy Reid and they can move him all over the field and give him the favorable matchups and allow his speed to be able to work at a level to where the teams, no matter what they do, they're going to have to shift this defender over with them, or this guy's going to have to follow him, and he gets that kind of free release and free start that you're talking about.
All right, let's get on to the second round pick, and this is your specialty, offensive lineman, and we're all, I think, pretty excited to see Kingsley Suamataia still available when the Chiefs selected in the second round, and they grabbed him. We had Jesse Newell on the show last week, and he actually had him mocked to the Chiefs in the first round, and he wasn't the only one. You did have him as a second-round grade, and you had him as the number 7 offensive tackle that was available to the Chiefs, but this was good value, and it fills a need. Tell us what you like about the Chiefs' new left tackle.
Yeah, with Kingsley, the thing that jumps out on him is, one, his size. He's got fantastic size, and he's got good quickness. I'll be curious to see what the Chiefs do with part of his foot quickness and pad level as he kind of gets here to the NFL level, what they work with on that part of it. But every offensive lineman's got something to clean up when they come to the league. I know Chiefs air scout Greg Castillo mentioned that, from his dad, Juan Castillo, being the O-line coach. He's been in the NFL forever, like you said perfectly. Every offensive lineman has something that they need to work on or clean up from college to get here. So you're never truly getting a perfect player coming out of college. So, I mean, for me to say that about Kingsley doesn't mean that he can't improve those things. From talking to him in his press conference and listening to him in his press conference, he comes from a family and a background that takes pride not only in their family name, but also in their workmanlike mentality. And with him being the cousin of Penei Sewell, and the way he talks about Penei, and the way, and the advice he's gotten from Penei and worked with Penei, Kingsley's not somebody that I'm going to worry about. He'll be on the right track with that part of it. But what I loved about him most was his heavy punches and how violent his punches could be from time to time in pass protection and in run blocking. So I think that there's a ton of promise for Andy Heck to be able to work with along the offensive line with him.
Boy, you start talking about heavy punches, you ought to see the way Steven perks up in his background of boxing and everything, too.
Yeah.
How quickly can he get up to speed, in your opinion, like to be what they need him to be? Can he be that early in his rookie year?
Hey, I'm not 100% sure, just simply because, I mean, with him coming out here, the thing I like the most about it is the fact that him and Wanya are going to get to compete at that left tackle spot. And they're going to bring out the best in each other, whether there's OTAs, mini camp, training camp, and they're going to be able to push each other to the level that the Chiefs are going to need for their franchise left tackle, protecting the most important player on the team and Patrick Mahomes. So it's not going to be something I don't think is going to be taken lightly by any means. But I mean, I think Kingsley has all the tools to do it. It's just a matter of physically watching him out there do it and how his kick step looks and how he's looking in terms of when, like Moss said, a perfectly Bill, just the angles and understanding that and how to be able to cut those off.
But is the 1-2 punch of Kingsley and Wanya Morris, is that enough for them to not need to bring back Donovan Smith?
The part on Donovan Smith that I'll be interested in is, does Donovan want to come back?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got two young offensive linemen that they've invested a second and third round pick in. And at that point, is that something that he wants to compete against, or does he want to go find something where he can get a certain amount of dollar amount? Or is he okay with staying out until training camp and not finding a team till then? You know, because some players at his age kind of would prefer not to have to deal with a ton of training camp if they don't have to.
All right, let's take a look at these two fourth-round picks. Jared Wiley, tight end at TCU. You had him as the fifth-rated tight end with a fourth-round grade. And then somewhat of a shocker for everyone, Jaden Hicks out of Washington State. You had him as the number two safety on the board with a second-round grade. Dane Brugler had him as the number one safety on the board, number 37 player overall. Tell us about Jared Wiley, and then how the hell Jaden Hicks fell to the fourth round when almost everyone had him as a second-round grade?
Yeah, on the Jared Wiley part, he's a big body tight end who's built more like Travis Kelce instead of lighter like Irv Smith is the free agent that the Chiefs signed. So with Wiley, what I saw on tape with him is he just had – you see him and you see the body style and you're like, okay, he's going to be a blocking tight end, kind of like Blake Bell. But then when you watch him, you're like, oh, he's got deceptive speed. And so then when you see that level of speed that he has for his size, you're like, okay, that's a mismatch right there that you can take advantage of with linebackers and safeties and really kind of have some fun with, to where maybe him and Travis Kelce are both running crossing routes, and then the defense has got to decide. But the biggest thing that I liked with Wiley is that he can take some of that over-the-middle stuff and take those hits and take those reps in that area to where maybe that saves Travis Kelce's body a little and that wear and tear, and you have him do some of – you have Jared do some of that dirty work over the middle, and also maybe Jared kind of helps with some of the perimeter blocking, like, you know, whether you're pulling out in space or, you know, maybe just kind of there off the end where you kind of reach block, and Kelce maybe doesn't have to do that, and maybe that doesn't, you know, tire him out as quickly in some games just because – that is a very taxing part of a game. In terms of Jaden Hicks, I think that's the question everybody's asking is why did he drop? What about his game caused teams to drop? Because he can do so much. He can be a box safety if he needs to, help and run support. He can cover a tight end very physically, but not in a way that's going to cause penalties. And then he can also be a split safety and cover half the field without a problem. He can athletically do all those things. And as when I was talking to him on the Zoom, he brings a physical presence. He wants to dislodge the football from the receiver or from the ball carrier, but he's learned to do it in a way to where it's not going to be targeting in college. So he's already got that effectiveness now of where to hit angle-wise with his shoulder to be able to pop the ball out.
So why did he drop?
That's the question nobody really has an answer to right now.
Well, too bad, so sad for the rest of the league. Okay, real quick, Hunter Norzad looks like on paper replacement for Nick Allegretti. I know that they got Kamal Hayden, Haddon, the cornerback out of Tennessee in the sixth. C.J. Hansen, another offensive lineman in the seventh. Just maybe out of those three, and any of the UDFAs that really stood out to you, just tell me anything you like from the fifth round on, and any of the undrafted free agents. It looks like the Chiefs might have landed a couple of interesting prospects there as well.
Yeah, Hunter is going to be the intriguing one as time goes on, because like you said, he's going to be the replacement for Nick Allegretti. But as Matt Derrick pointed out on our podcast, 41 is the mic, he's got a mechanical engineering degree. So he's a very smart tactician mind, very smart mind with the background that he had in college. So Hunter has the perfect type of mind that you want from a center or an offensive lineman in general, but especially from a center, to where they're thinking three, four steps ahead and can identify stuff and recognize stuff immediately and be able to effectively communicate what they need to do and how they need to do it. And he's got such a strong grip about whenever he latches on to opponent, they're not going anywhere because of the grip that he has, similar to what Creed had coming out of college from Oklahoma. And then on top of it, he's got a really good anchor and re-anchor. So if a defender can get a little bit of leverage on him and walk him back a step or two, the way Hunter's able to reset and re-anchor and lock it down, the party ends at that point, and that guy's not pushing him back any further. So Hunter has all the tools to succeed, and I'm really excited about what his future can be. Corner-wise, I'll get real quick to Kamal. Kamal has a lot of athletic ability. The thing that stood out to me sometimes is how he could high point a football vertically. And like I said on the podcast, we did it looked like he had an invisible stepladder at times because he shouldn't be able to get as high as he did to be able to tip some of those passes, but he did and found a way. And I like what he brings to the table athletically.
Favorite UDFA?
I would say Fabian Lovett. Nice. From Florida State. I think there's some promise there, and I'll be intrigued to see what he could. Obviously, name-wise, Curtis Jacobs, a linebacker from Penn State. You know, hopefully there's some promise there as well.
Nick, great stuff as always. We're looking forward to talking to you again very soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Follow Nick Jacobs at Jacobs71. Great stuff about the NFL draft. We'll be back after this on WHB. Good show today. Good guests today. We had WWE superstar Liv Morgan, who was just absolutely delightful. Monday Night Raw, the draft in town tonight at T-Mobile Center.
It's going to be hopping.
Are you going?
There. I wish.
See, as much as you talk about, what
I
do you
know.
Mean you wish?
I wish I was going. I have prior commitments.
Oh, okay.
Got them adult meetings, you know.
Logan Paul's going to be there, though.
I know.
Would you cheer him or boo him?
I would cheer Logan Paul.
Yeah.
I think he's good. He's entertaining.
Good worker. Takes his bumps.
Yeah, he does. It's impressive how he's really, I mean, he's thrived in the WWE.
Todd Lebo will spend an hour taking shots at the Big 12, which was unique, so. Didn't expect that out of him.
Completely backhanded.
Yeah. He's still butthurt about losing to the Jayhawks right. The last time they ever played in football.
Well, and disagreed at the at how you lost, how right. They lost to Kansas,
yeah,
didn't
butt weapon.
Tried to set you straight on that.
Yeah.
Scott Carroll, former Major League pitcher, Liberty product, was in the studio with us. We talked to Bill Moss on the phone about the draft, and then Nick Jacobs just broke down the draft like no other. So that was
awesome.
Good.
That was great.
Right.
I thought you'd been pretty solid today, too, you know, honestly.
Nope. No. No, no. Well, we move on. There is no rest for the weary. How about a nice trip to Chillicothe? Chillicothe, here I come. We've got the conference championship track meet today.
Good luck, Julia.
As Miss Julia St. John will be competing varsity in three events, the 100, the 4x100, and her favorite, the long jump. And so, and you know, we didn't know she'd be varsity this year. She is absolutely surpassed all expectations. And we were talking last night. She was packing her bag and everything. She's a little nervous. I said, you know what? Everything you do is just gravy. I cannot believe how great you've done this year and how proud I am of you. And she gave me a big hug, and I felt good. And then I didn't tell her how nervous I was because that would freak her out. So I said, but guess what? Whatever we do, we're going to have fun doing it, and I will be right there watching you, whether you want me to be or not. And she just laughed. So Chillicothe, anyone want to give me any dinner tips for Chillicothe? Where should I stop? Maybe a quick sandwich or something? It's a lengthy track meet. I need sustenance, please. Feed me, Chillicothe. Look at me. I'm hungry. Have a great day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Goodbye.